This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Jacob Dinizon was once one of the most well-known Yiddish authors of the 1800s. His writings were seen in newspapers. Thousands of copies of his novels were purchased throughout Poland. But since his death in the early 20th century, Dinizon's writings fell into obscurity and may have been lost forever, but for the efforts of Scott Davis. He's the founder and publisher of Jewish Story Press, which will soon publish a collection of Jacob Dinizon's stories. Scott Davis is here to talk about his 10-year journey to publish Memories and Scenes, Shtetl Childhood Writers. Scott, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. It's so good to be here.
Tell us about Jacob Dinizon.
Well, Jacob Dinizon was a late 19th century Jewish writer who was very beloved and actually quite famous during his time, but whose stories, because of many reasons, especially because of the demise of Yiddish based on the issues that followed the Holocaust, has really kind of fallen into has really been lost to us. And I was really lucky to discover him while doing research on some of the more famous Jewish writers of that period, and have decided to try to bring his stories forward into the 21st century.
You made reference to those more famous, in a sense, not in their time, but whose fame has endured. Tell us about those three of those writers in particular whose fame endured.
Yes, there are three writers that have come down to us as the classic writers of modern Yiddish literature. The first is named Sholem Abramovich, and he has been called the Zayde, the grandfather of modern Yiddish literature. And he was dubbed the Zayde by Sholem Aleichem, who you may be familiar with. His Tevye stories were turned into what Broadway musical?
A big one.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Ah!
Right,
Tevye,
Fiddler on
course,
the Roof. So that's where most people
we
are
resisted,
familiar.
By the way, playing that music coming into this.
Just oh, did
because,
you?
Well, you know. It just seemed too on the nose. But there you go.
That's right. It's great. It's great. He was a great writer. He was kind of like the Mark Twain of Yiddish writers. And then the third writer was named Isaac Leib Peretz, and more commonly I.L. Peretz. And Peretz has been called by scholars who like to complete families the father of modern Yiddish literature. So you have Abramovich as the grandfather. You have Peretz as the father, and then you have Sholem Aleichem as the grandson of Yiddish literature from that period between around 1865. Dinizon died about 1919, and so he was the last of these four writers to pass away.
His writing was about as popular, right? I mean, a lot of his work was in print, and certainly at his death, he was well honored and well revered.
Yes, he was extremely well loved and well read. His very first book was called Der Schwarzer Jungermannschick, The Dark Young Man. It was published in 1877. It became a runaway bestseller, but what makes that so interesting is, of course, because it was written in Yiddish, the audience for the book, you know, it was comprised almost completely of Jewish readers. So it became very, very popular. Dinizon would go on to write several other novels, and then he would befriend Isaac Leib Peretz, and out of his own pocket actually publish Peretz's first book of Yiddish stories. And the two of them would become very good friends and partner on several publications that followed into the early 20th century.
When his work, as you say, it did fall into obscurity, but when we're talking about Yiddish writers of that period who did enjoy enormous popularity, was there a form? What were they writing about?
Well, they were writing about das Yiddische Volk, the simple, common, ordinary people. The people that were living in the shtetlach, the tiny towns and villages of Russia and Eastern Europe. And they were writing about, you know, their hopes and their dreams, the conflicts that were going on. And as so many other writers were doing in other countries around the world, they were writing about that conflict between the traditional societal norms and the new modern ideas that were coming forth at the turn of the 20th century.
And this made, to some extent, their writing in Yiddish a controversy in literary circles.
It did in some ways, because the people that were interested in developing the Jewish Enlightenment felt that people should write, that writers should be writing in Hebrew. Now, at that time in Eastern Europe and in Russia, and even here in America, Jews had two primary Jewish languages in addition to the language of the country they lived in. And they were Hebrew, which was the language of the synagogue and of the biblical scholar and of the enlightened intellectuals. And then you had Yiddish, which was called the Mama Lushin, the mother tongue. And this was the language of the home and the street and the less educated folk. And so when Jewish writers started writing in Yiddish, a lot of the Enlightenment community felt that this was not really the appropriate way to go. In fact, Yiddish, which just means Jewish, was kind of despaired at the time. They called it der Jargon, the jargon. So you didn't call it Yiddish; you just called it the jargon. And in about 1865, there started this effort to try to make Yiddish a legitimate literary language. And Jacob Dinizon, it turned out, was a very vocal proponent for making Yiddish, in effect, a national language for a people that didn't have a nation.
What is the stuff? What's the subject matter of Dinizon's work?
So Dinizon talks about what was going on in the shtetl communities of his of Eastern Europe and of Poland. And the shtetls were these tiny towns and villages, Jewish towns and villages. And so some of the stories include a young orphan boy. He's lived his whole life in the yeshiva, the study house, and he has this gift for being a wood carver. But he's also thought of by everyone in the community as the kid that goes for this and goes for that. Until one day, a matchmaker comes along and asks him, "How old are you? It's time for you to start thinking about me finding you a wife." And this freaks out the little boy. His name is, well, he's not a little boy by this time. This freaks out the teenager. His name is Borach. And Borach starts to wonder, how old am I and why can't I remember? And he goes through that whole process until he finally finds resolution at the end of the story. So it's a wonderful story, and it has a wonderful ending that is filled with a great deal of heart. And that, I think, is what Dinizon brings to his storytelling that is different from the other writers. Dinizon is really the one who speaks from the heart.
You're not going to tell me that that story then became Yentl, are you?
No, okay. that's not the story.
Different matchmaker. Will you read for us, give us a sample of this literature, the work of Jacob Dinizon?
Let me share a little piece, actually, from the story Yossel Algebrenik and his student. So Yossel Algebrenik, means algebra man. And it turns out that there was this young man who was very bright and who studied the Torah and the Talmud, you know, the religious books, and was exceptionally good at that. And then for some reason, he suddenly becomes interested in mathematics, higher mathematics, algebra. So we see this interesting play of how the modern ideas are starting to come into the Jewish community. Well, the community is just scandalized by this. I mean, this great mind turns to algebra. And so he is kind of looked down upon. He's frowned upon. People call him a heretic. They call him Algebrenik, the algebra man, as a way of putting him down. And so along the way, a very rich man brings his son in to learn a little bit about algebra, to learn a little bit about the modern ideas that are coming into the world. And the young boy is so intelligent and so bright that the teacher is called the Rebbe. The teacher and the student really connect. But the student is very, very sensitive. He's artistic and will later go off and learn how to he'll become a musician, he'll become a poet, he'll become a writer. He comes back to talk to his teacher. So his teacher is Yossel, he's the Rebbe. And at the very end of the story, Yossel starts to play on the Nechel, the student, starts to play on the piano to warm up the heart of his teacher. And he begins to slowly warm up. And what's happening as he's playing is suddenly the sunset is happening, and there are beautiful sunset, the rays of the sun are reflecting off the crystals. And so Nechel takes the Rebbe over to the window, and he says, "Rebbe, don't you see how beautifully the colors change, how everything is alive, moving and soaking in the beauty of the sunset? Don't you feel the joy in your heart to see all this with your own eyes, to grasp this with your consciousness, and at the same time to feel a part of it all, that the world is for you too, Rebbe? Perhaps everything can be figured out with algebra, but you can only feel with your heart." So then Yossele, he sees this, but he responds, "You have taught me a chapter of the praise songs that I have never known. Nevertheless, I will still say again and again that I found the truth in algebraic logic, and in that truth I see the repair of the world." And then Nechel turns around and looks at his teacher, and Yossel's eyes wander again to the setting sun. The rays shone on his face, and his eyes followed the golden clouds to take in the entire glory and enormity of the moment far away. And as he stood there with the sun reflecting on his face, a deep sigh tore from his heart that said more than words could ever say. "Your world is beautiful, O God, and my eyes have just seen it for the very first time."
Scott Davis, founder of Jewish Storyteller Press, reading on the state of things, reading from Memories and Scenes, Shtetl Childhood Writers, the work of Jacob Dinizon. Beautiful work, and you can hear in that this kind of tension and conflict faced by a people with enormous anxieties about how to assimilate and how to maintain our culture and identity, particularly over and against. Now, this is the 1800s, right? A time when persecution is mounting, violent persecution and pogroms in Eastern Europe.
Yes, it was a very difficult time. There has always been anti-Semitism, it seems, and that Jews have tried to struggle against that and to find their way through that. I think partly that's one of the reasons why they tried to stay as insular as they did, as a form of protection against some of that. So it was a difficult time, and Jews were trying to make their way into the modern world. Some were resisting that mightily.
We talked about the fact that Jacob Dinizon himself sort of fell from public view. We didn't know much about him. How did you find him, and where did your interest begin?
So this is a pretty interesting story, because I had learned about the classic writers of modern Yiddish literature as a teenager. And I carried around these books of translated stories throughout my entire life, from teenagehood all the way up to my move to North Carolina about 20 years ago. And then when my father passed away, I was about 50 years old, and I thought, I would really like to reconnect with my synagogue community in Raleigh. And there was an opening for a religious school teacher for ninth graders. And I thought, what a great way to reconnect with my synagogue. And so I took the class and found out that this class was a rather unruly bunch. May no shame befall them. And since I didn't really have any experience with ninth graders, I don't think I contributed much to the situation. Well, one day I brought this book of translated stories in and read a story by I.L. Peretz. And everybody got quiet, very quiet. And I thought, how could they fall asleep so quickly? And I looked up and they were wide awake. They were paying attention. And when the story was over, we had the very best conversation. A couple of weeks later, I had the same experience with the class. So I thought, what would happen if I took these stories and turned them into plays or maybe into monologues for storytelling? And as I started to do research on Sholem Aleichem and on I.L. Peretz, I started seeing this new name popping up here and there, Jacob Dinizon. You know, he was involved with Sholem Aleichem's first literary journal. He published Peretz's first book of Yiddish stories. He was a best-selling writer in his own right. But when I went looking for stories by him, I couldn't find any because none of them had been turned into English, none of them had been translated into English, and they just weren't available.
Sadly, I have about 30 seconds left, but where did you find them?
I found them at the National Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Massachusetts. Tina Lunson was able to translate them into English, and now Dinizon's book will sit on the shelf with his friends, Sholem Abramovich, who was called Mendel Mocher's Forum, Sholem Aleichem, and I.L. Peretz.
Scott Davis, thank you for your hard work, and thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Scott Davis is the founder of Jewish Storyteller Press. He's going to read from Jacob Dinizon's Memories and Scenes, Shtetl Childhood Writers, this Sunday, Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. You can get more details at our website, stateofthings.org. And that's our program for today. As I said, you can go to the website anytime you want, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Magdawi, and Will Michaels. Our intern, Charlie Shelton. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director. And North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.